Okay. Today we're going to do the topic of Amira La'akum, and we're going to clear up some misconceptions about what it means, about whether how to ask a non-Jew to do things for you on Shabbos, when you can, when you can't, which is a lot of the time, and we're going to clear up a bunch of misconceptions about how a person asks a non-Jew to do malacha. Okay, so we've seen, for example, you give a lot of examples of asking a non-Jew to do malacha. Turn on the lights, and I don't know, involved in those situations where...
Isn't that only involved for yourself?
But not for other people.
For instance, let's say the shul lights are not out.
Uh-huh.
And I go and ask anybody that I see them. The reason I say think that is if I go to the bed, the Jews, they're in the selections there, I don't know whether they're Jewish or not.
Right.
So if I ask the think I know for sure he's not Jewish.
I'm sorry, I don't know that word. It doesn't sound so complimentary. A non-Jew. Okay.
A non-Jew that I can recognize.
That he knows is a non.
But they could be Jewish too.
Yeah, you never know in today's day and age. You just don't know.
I'm talking to
them. His mother might be Jewish. You never know. Okay.
That's so, what I'm talking about. Can you do this?
The first thing is, what's wrong with asking a non-Jew to do work for you? What are you doing wrong? Meaning, so what? First of all, figure out what's wrong with it. Why can't I ask? I mean, what's the problem with me asking somebody to do something for me? On one hand, okay, I can't do it myself, but why can't I ask somebody else to do it for me? So we're going to see we learned this passage from Yeshayahu. This is one of the reasons why. We say, Pasuk Yeshayahu says, source number one, Im tashiv mishabat raglecha asos chasecha biyam kachi. If you restrain your foot because of Shabbos from pursuing your holy business, your business on my holy day, v'karata la'shabbat oneg v'kdosh Hashem mechubad v'ki baratom yasos drachecha v'imtzol chetzecha v'daber davar, and you call Shabbos a delight, a holy day of the Lord, honorable, and shall honor it, not doing your own ways, not pursuing your own business, nor speaking in vain matters, then al shishaneg al Hashem v'yirkafti ba'bama say aretz. You'll need that one for now. Okay, then, where am I? Then shall you delight in thyself in the Lord, and I will cause thee to ride up in the high places of the earth and feed with the heritage of Jacob thy father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. Meaning, the Nabi, Rabbi Yeshayahu, was very upset. He was castigating the people. He said, you know, you have to, if you want to keep Shabbos, there's a couple of things that you're not allowed to do, and one of them is, you know, conducting business. We talked about the idea of conducting business because of writing and things that are prohibited like that. So the key words are minshol chavtecha midaver davar, speaking in vain matters and pursuing your own business. Okay, so there are things clearly that are forbidden to do, even though you don't violate any known precepts. So if I wanted to ask a non-Jew, so we're going to see Rashi says that if I want to ask a non-Jew, asking the non-Jew would violate this principle of minshol chavtecha midaver davar. And so let's see the Rashi. One second. So the Gemara says, the Gemara in where are we, source number two in Avodah Zarah, is talking about, let's say for example I sell an ox to a non-Jew. The Gemara says, well, you're not allowed to sell an ox to a non-Jew. So the Gemara says, well, why not? Maybe perhaps it's going to do work on Shabbos. Okay, so the Gemara says, no. Keva dizamda kanya. As soon as you sold it, it belongs to the non-Jew. That's not a problem. The Gemara says. Rashi says, here it says Rashi on the left hand side of the top of the page, the Eina Shel Yisrael, and it doesn't belong to a Jewish person anymore. And you're not violating the principle of Lifne Iver Lo Tite Michal, of putting a blind, a stumbling post in front of a blind man. Why? Because a non Jew is not forbidden, is not commanded to Shabbos, meaning. If I give a non-Jew my car, I say, go have a good time. Is my car obligated to work on Shabbos? Let's say I sell him my car. Good example, right? So say, you can't sell him your car because he's going to drive your car on Shabbos.
So it's not yours anymore.
It is. That's exactly the point. Rashi says, this is just a side point I'm not going to get into. About Gabe Revia, Leka Lamei Marhati. This is actually a good side point, relevant, very relevant for today. Revia means bestiality. Mm-hmm. So let's say you know the non-Jew is buying your cow for extracurricular activities.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So are you allowed to sell your cow to the non-Jew?
Oh,
so you
okay.
Say, well, no, it's not my cow anymore. So what?
Uh-huh.
Just read Rashi.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's not my cow anymore. You know, he can, you know, Bob the farmer can do whatever he wants. So Rashi says, no, that's not true. There's an issue of Lifnei Iver. Why? The Hasam Ka'avar Lifnei Iver, because then, vis-a-vis this farmer, Farmer Bob, the cow is a stumbling block. Why? Lifnei Shebenei Noach Nitztavu Al HaRevia. Because non-Jews are commanded against, they're forbidden from
bestiality
and all kinds of inappropriate relationships, which dovetails very well into the news today. You know, there is an issue, and there is in Massachusetts, there's a relevance of Jews becoming involved in a cause and speaking out. You can't just say, I mean, the real question is there an obligation for a Jew to get involved and to try to prevent a non-Jew from sinning? Okay, we can all assume it's sinful behavior, but is it my obligation to prevent a non-Jew from sinning? That's one question. Let's say there's another question. You're standing online in the Massachusetts State Courthouse, and a guy is standing next to you and says, Can I borrow your pen? You're the last pen on earth, and I need to sign, have this marriage document so I can go get married to my partner. So, says Rashi, there is an issue of Lifnei Iver, Lo Tithen Mishal. You have an obligation vis-a-vis your fellow man to make sure that he doesn't sin. Okay, end of diatribe. Aval al HaShabbos lo misabu b'nei Noach. But non-Jews were not commanded about Shabbos. There was no problem of a non-Jew violating Shabbos, because for them,
it's not Shabbos.
I tell this to people all the time when they come to me to convert. The first thing they say is, I've been trying to keep the Sabbath, to the best of my ability. And I say to them, well, it's very nice you're trying to keep the Sabbath, but to my point, you don't have to. In fact, not only does you have to, you're not allowed to. They don't let you. Not at least completely. And they're very much taken aback by it. What do you mean? It says in the Bible. Yeah. Okay. Okay, four lines from the bottom in the Rashi. Last word on the line. Umasha asur li Yisrael lomar la'obed kochavim asher likach. So why can't a Jew say to a non-Jew, hey, do this for me? Says Rashi, zeo mishum nimtzo chatzecha v'daver davar. Right? Remember that pasuk in Yisrael? Your items, your property, v'daver davar, dibur asur. Speaking is forbidden. Certain types of speech are forbidden. Business talk, but now also asking a non-Jew to do something on Shabbos, that's forbidden. Okay?
I have a great story. My Jada told me this story. I don't know if it's true or not.
Uh-huh.
But in the town that he lived in, there was Bukovina in Poland. There were several non-Jews in the town, and whether it was his house or his brother's house, they forgot to leave something burning. They forgot to put a light on in the house on Shabbos. And their next door neighbor was a non-Jew. And they came up with a plan that they were going to invite him to come in for some schnapps.
Ah.
They're going to come in, he's going to go. But what they were going to do is they're going to let him go into the house first. This way he'll see that it's dark, and he'll put on the light because he's going to come in, and he's going to come for schnapps, to make a l'chaim.
Right.
And that's exactly what he did, and he came in, and they made the l'chaim, and they talked. And he left the house. Maybe. He shut off the light. And I, to this day, I still don't know if that was a true story or not, but it's such a good story.
That's an interesting story.
What?
It's a common story. It's a folk story.
Yeah.
It's a great story because it actually dovetails very well into the idea of what you can ask in a... What? We're going to learn.
You ask a non-Jew to do something for a community.
We're going to talk about all these things. Okay, let's see. So we have to figure out what's permitted and what's not permitted, what you're allowed to do, what you're not, and then we'll move on from there. Says the Mishnah, let's say your house is on fire, okay? And the non-Jewish fire department shows up. So it says, Nachri Sheba Lichbos. So the non-Jews come, and they're going to put out your fire. Ein Omrim Lo Kabe. You can't tell them, put out the fire. Why? Because that's for your benefit. The al tikva, but don't tell him, don't put out the fire. Because your obligation, his resting is not your responsibility. So there's a fire going on, he wants to put out the fire for whatever compelling reason. You shouldn't tell him, my house is burning down, put out my fire. You're not allowed to tell him that. But you also don't have to tell him, don't. Okay? Aval katan shabal lichbos. What if a minor comes to put out the fire, a Jewish kid? You're not allowed to let him do it because his rest is on you. It's your responsibility. Rashi. You're not allowed to tell him to put out the fire. It's a din de Rabbanan. The Rabbanan said, you're not allowed to say, Shavuot means a de Rabbanan. Rabbanan said, sit still and don't tell a non-Jew what to do on Shabbos, even if your house is burning down. Melo tichveh, but don't tell them not to. You didn't tell the fire department, your neighbor called them, somebody called them. Now, if somebody's life is in danger, call. If you're afraid somebody's life is in danger, call. But if you're sure everybody's out of the house, you don't know what to do, you know, you're in big trouble. That's a trying one. That's a difficult one. It's a very tough one. So he says, don't tell them not to. Because why? Because you don't have to stop him from putting out a fire. He puts out a fire. That's his own thing. Why? Rashi, she'ein shebisasa shel nachri aleihem, because the rest of the non-Jew is not your responsibility. Yisrael ein musar ashebisasa shel nachri she'ein o'avio. He's not your slave. So he doesn't have to rest. He could do whatever he wants. He could either be drinking at a bar, or he could be putting out your house fire. Whichever one, that's his option. He could do whatever he wants. That's not your problem. So therefore, we see why you can't ask him to do it. If a non-Jew comes and does it on his own, if he comes and puts out your fire on his own, that's his own thing that's permitted. But, says the next Mishnah, the Mishnah, two Mishnahs later, source number 3, actually it's 3B, I guess, because I have two 3s. See source number 3 on the bottom? Nachri shehidlik es haner. Let's say a non-Jew lit a fire, turn on the light. Mishtameish le'oro Yisrael. Okay? Okay? If a non-Jew turns on the light, then I'm allowed to take benefit from it. Yisrael, but if the non-Jew came into my house and turned on the light for me, usher. I am not permitted to benefit from it.
What about in the old country? They used to have a Shabbos guy, he used to come into the house and turn on the heat, or whatever it had to do.
Light a fire, stoke a fire.
Stoke the fire and
everything.
Well, you told him, but you didn't tell him the Shabbos, you told him during the week, because you're paying him during the week.
What do you think from this Mishnah? From the Mishnah says, what does that sound like?
In any time.
Right.
But he's doing it on his own.
If
you didn't pay him, he wouldn't come in and do it. Right? Sure. This is actually an excellent question. Eddie's asking an excellent question. We're going to have the answer to this question by the end of the evening. The question is, a non-Jew, this is how they did it in every house in the old country, right? Everybody in the shtetl. Because you woke up in the morning, it was freezing, right? So instead of walking around, freezing cold, all Shabbos long, instead of that, what they would do is the non-Jew would come, light the fire, get it all set, and then go on his way. Walking, they'd all have the keys.
Whatever, either you left the door open, or...
That's what it was.
I don't remember, but that's what I hear.
Oh, that's what you heard. That's what they tell me also. So, can I ask a non-Jew before Shabbos to do something for me on Shabbos? Says David?
No.
Why? Now, in our case, milk. In my case of the non-Jew lighting the fire, did I ask him to do anything?
In the case here?
No. So even if I didn't ask him to do anything, if he does it for me, I'm not allowed to benefit from that. That's a rule.
If
he does it, that's why your story was so interesting. Mm-hmm. If a non-Jew does something for himself, then you're allowed to benefit from it. But if he does it specifically for you, then you're not allowed to benefit from it on Shabbos. Okay?
Okay, what if he takes token benefits?
What do you mean token benefit?
He comes to stoke your fire, and he sits in the house a little bit to warm up.
We'll see. Let's see. Well, we're going to see about the fire thing. What? Good question. Okay. So now, one second. So the Mishnah wants to know, how come I'm not allowed to, I can benefit from the non-Jew putting out my house fire. He's allowed to put out the fire. The fire department can come. But at the same time, you tell me he can't light a fire. What's the difference between the two? Says Tosfos. This is the accepted position. See where the line is, the arrow is of the Tosfos over there? Below. It says, V'lo dami, our Mishnah is not comparable, l'ha da'amu la'el, that which we said before, nachri sheba lichbos, ein omrim lo kabeh v'al tichbeh. Over there you told me, hey, what the heck? Over there you told me, I don't have to stop him. I'm allowed to benefit from his action. V'hacha, but here, asher kishoseh bishvil Yisrael. It's forbidden when you do it for a Jew. What's the difference? When do we say that the non-Jew is doing it for himself? When do we permit it and say that it's allowed Hani mile, those words apply b'kiboy. Ukiyotebo, when you're putting out a fire in similar nature, she'ein Yisrael nehene mimaseh hanachri. When the non-Jew puts out your fire, you're not benefiting constructively from his action. Correct.
How would you not be benefiting? He's saving your possessions. He's preserving your home.
It's not a constructive benefit. It's a destructive benefit. Meaning, you're right, he's saving your home, but after the fire is out, are you benefiting from what he did? He might have saved your money, but you're not benefiting from what he did.
Oh, I see what you... Okay.
Steve doesn't like it.
No.
Why?
That's forbidden.
It's not forbidden for him. You have to separate. Is it forbidden for him to do the action?
No.
No. Are you now benefiting from his behavior? You might be indirectly benefiting, but you're not tangibly benefiting. Okay, and remember also, we're dealing with Gzeira de Rabbana, the Rabbana goes there. They said you're not allowed to benefit from the Lach of a non-Jew. So the question is, when were the Rabbanan goes there? When did that Gzeira apply? So Tosa says, here I have two Mishnahs. One Mishnah says I don't have to make him stop. So clearly, this is Mishnah. So Tosa says, I need to understand. Why did the Mishnah tell me I don't have to tell him not to put out my fire, but I can't benefit? So it must be that when the Rabbanan made their Gzeira, they only made their Gzeira of benefiting from tangible behavior, from significant tangible action. But if it's not significant, if it's not something that's tangible, then I can benefit from the thing that the non-Jew did. Okay? 1 second. So let's see.
On the other hand, the farmer is doing it not because it's your house. He's doing it because it's his job.
Right.
To put out fire.
Okay.
Period.
Doesn't matter why he's doing
it.
What if it was his job to light the fire? His job to light fire. Let's say you had the non-Jew, his job was to make sure that he was on every house in the city. He wasn't employed by Eddie Cassidy Stakel. He was employed by the city of Lake Park. Right? So he went to every house and lit the fire on shop. Would that make a difference? No. It doesn't matter who he's employed for. It matters whether you're benefiting tangibly. Aviva.
What if a lot of people do live in a small town.
Yeah.
And you have a regular fire department. You have a, what do you call it, around...
Volunteers.
Right. And it's predominantly a Jewish town. Are you allowed to have Jewish volunteers?
It's a big problem.
Yeah.
Not so simple. In Israel, I mean, the problem is... Some fires, most fires you have to put out because there's problems with pikuach nefesh.
Right.
I mean, if you can't let a fire burn out of control. Because fires, you let a fire, house fire burn out of control, what happens? It jumps down. Right, it jumps down. You can't do that. So that's a problem for a rabbi of a city.
When you say a tangible benefit.
Let's see. The location says, Abal Hacha, 5 lines from the bottom, in the line. But here, in our case of lighting the candle, Shiguf Yisrael Nehemeh B'maise Shel Nachri. See how he puts it? I'm putting it very carefully. Guf Yisrael, the Jewish person, his body in a way, mm-hmm. benefits from the act of the non-Jew. Mm-hmm. Tangible, or I would put it, tangible, significant benefit. Lo amri not died to the nafshav, and you can't say he did it for himself. Therefore, the non-Jew, in that case, the non-Jew, had in mind for your benefit. Okay? So now we learn two things. One, two different principles. Principle one, you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do work for you on Shabbos. Two, work or work for you, we'll see. Two, even if you didn't ask him, you're not allowed to benefit from the work that the non-Jew does for you on Shabbos. Those are two separate things. Okay, I've seen this done many times. A mailman comes by, and a person says, oh, Mr. Mailman, I forgot to turn on this light, and it would be really good. People think that as long as you don't say it, right, it would be really good if this light was on Shabbos. Okay, if a mailman goes and turns on that light, you're not allowed to benefit from that light on Shabbos because it's Gzeira d'Rabbanan because of this reason.
Okay.
Because of Hana, because of benefit. First of all, in that case, you might have asked improperly. Even if you ask in the proper way, nonetheless, you benefited, and that's forbidden.
Okay. Somebody delivers something incorrectly to my house.
Yeah.
Normally what I'll do is leave it in the mailbox. The next day the letter carrier comes and picks it up and takes it away.
Right.
What if he does this on Friday? He delivers something to my house. It's not for me.
Uh-huh.
I put it in my mailbox. He should come on Shabbos too. I'm not saying anything to him. But that's his
job. What's the malacha that he's doing?
He's taking away a piece of mail.
Why is that a malacha? You mean because it's hotza? You're taking it out of the rishus?
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, let me change the scenario.
His scenario, see, that question is interesting because he's going anyway. In this case, he's at your house anyway, and he's taking the mail anyway. Do you understand what I'm saying? You're not asking him to do anything that he wouldn't otherwise be doing.
The only question would be if he's a Jewish man.
What about a better question? Can I deliver? I've thought about this question. I don't remember the exact answer, but can I send a FedEx package on that will arrive on Saturday's delivery? I've had that question before. It's a serious question. Because then I'm asking a non-Jew, really, I'm asking a non-Jew to ask another non-Jew to deliver a package on Shabbos. Now, the hardest part is...
Who the recipient is?
Why should it matter? It shouldn't matter. The recipient doesn't have to receive it, doesn't have to accept it.
What's the likelihood of being late?
Zero.
Sunday or Monday.
Not a good likelihood.
No.
In fact, I'm asking to do it specifically to arrive on Shabbos. I'm asking to deliver that package on Shabbos. That's, I think, a serious problem. I mean, and you have to have a very, very compelling reason to do that. I think I had a reason once. It was a very important question. I think I had, I don't remember. I had Anita Shaila, and I didn't know the answer. Anita Shaila is on Maris, right? Maris means you get a cloth, and you have to look at it, and you have to examine it and see whether it's blood or it's not. So I didn't know the answer. And the only way to have the question answered was I had to send it to a rabbi. So, lo and behold, that's Federal Express. Right? Now, the woman needed an answer on Sunday, by Sunday night. The thing about Nidah Shilas is you have to look at them in sunlight, according to many poskim. It has to be looked at during the day. That actually didn't deliver on Sunday. So what do?
But they can deliver on Saturday.
They will deliver on Saturday.
You can get the answer.
Correct. And then you get the answer on Sunday. So we'll talk about that also.
Okay, another one.
But I think it's not so clear to have Saturday delivery for nothing, for no reason. Once a guy needed his passport, I remember, to get to Israel. That I remember. Yeah.
Yom Tov, I'm walking to shul, and because it's Yom Tov and the city and the county didn't get around to it, the cross by Sarah.
They still didn't get around to it. Have they?
No.
I'll follow up. Remind me, I have to follow up.
Right. But it's Yom Tov.
Yeah.
Not Shabbos.
What's the difference?
Oh, well.
Someone else?
Somebody sees him trying to cross the street. He's not Jewish.
Yeah.
He pushes the thing.
What's the difference between Yom Tov and Shabbos?
Hmm?
What would be the difference? That's it, Shabbos.
Shabbos goes on for 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, Yom Tov is not going on for 10 seconds.
Okay.
But he's not going to cross. He sees that I'm waiting to cross.
Yeah.
He pushes it. The thing works for 10 seconds. Am I allowed to run across the street?
Well, even whether he pushed it or not, you would still run across the street.
No.
You would not.
He'd wait until there was a lull in the traffic enough that he could go.
No, I wouldn't go there. I'd wait for...
He did it for you without you asking him to do it. That would be a little interesting, because then, like, if he pushed it for you and then you're not going,
right.
You know, that would be a little bit awkward. He did it for you.
It's like a car stopping to let me pass, and I didn't ask.
He did it. Now, would you consider that a tangible physical benefit that he pushed the light?
Sure.
You would? Interesting question.
Like somebody stopping their car, giving me the right of way.
That's an interesting question. Somebody stopping their car, you stopped already.
I heard.
You know, yeah.
I heard somebody say, I don't know.
The worst thing is when you walk into my house back to Beth Shalom and all the Jews stop. Keep going. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Don't stop. Another malacha. Keep going. Go.
Can you help?
Here's the Shabbos interview. Yeah.
Can I tell most of them to move?
Yeah. No, because once they stop, then...
They stop, right.
I heard that a rabbi to a wealthy man. And he sat in the library, the maid came in and turned on the light.
Oh, I'll tell you the story. I told you the story. Yeah, I'm going to tell the story at the end. Yeah. So now we have two halachas. We have the halacha of benefiting, which you're not allowed to do if he does it for your benefit. Gina, your example, it could very well be that you probably shouldn't benefit. I mean, there are other issues involved because it's going to look like you're crazy and you know what I'm saying? Or you could probably just fake it and say, I'll have to wait for somebody or whatever. Has that happened to you, that somebody's done it for you and not crossed?
I don't know.
In theory. Okay.
I'm an inventive.
Okay. The reason actually I talked about this question was because I had the following scenario. Somebody called me and asked me, I'm in a wheelchair, and I'm going to be in Shabbos in a building that only has an elevator. I'm going to be in the third floor. Can I use the elevator or not? And what are the ramifications of it? So that's a question of a Mira L'Nochri. Because in that case, let's say, for example, so the elevator stops in the third floor. Okay? You get in. Then what?
Can you press the button?
No, you can't press the button. Okay? Let's assume, and I think it's a fair assumption, that the problems of the elevator, for a healthy person, there are issues of using a regular elevator because of counterbalances and weights and how the elevators are are constructed, et cetera, et cetera. But for a non-healthy person, let's assume that that would be permitted. So now, what do? You're in the elevator, and somebody else gets in with you. Right? Can you ask them? Can you tell them? Can you, whatever. Are you allowed to do that on Shabbos? So we'll talk about that as well. What was really the motivating factor for me talking about this? Yeah.
What is your I have a couple times. You know, sometimes I walk home, an elderly person, you know, from the Federation of Shabbos, or I see some other people who help some of our senior citizens walk home from school back to the Federation.
Okay.
But obviously you can't get in. But you have to wait for somebody to come. How do you get them in? What do you...
What do you mean?
I mean...
Oh, in the door?
Yeah.
Isn't there a...
There is one door that is manually operated.
Yeah.
Oh, usually
there is a manual operated door in the back. We've used that door.
Usually they don't like to go in there, so I don't know why.
They don't like to because they want to go in the front. But you can say to them, I keep Shabbos. Let me walk you in the other way.
I think you need a key. So if the resident has a key,
you're fine.
You're fine.
I've opened the door.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they have a key.
You have a key?
No, they have a key.
Right. Oh, they have a key. Right. Turn to page 2. Says the Rambam, "Asa lomar lanachri lasos lanu malacha b'Shabbos." You can't ask a non-Jew to do anything for you. Afal pisha in the mitzvah ala Shabbos. Even though he's not commanded on Shabbos, it's not his problem. The afal pisha amalo mikodem haShabbos. Dave Christ is right. Even if he told him before Shabbos, "Hey man, I'd like you to come over and do my whatever." Okay. The afal pisha in the sarach losa malacha ala la'achar Shabbos. Let's say you say, "I want you to come on Shabbos and wash my clothes so that I'll have them for Sunday." Still not allowed to do it. But Darazeh Asher Midivrei Sofrim, the rabbis forbade this. Why? Kedei Shelo Tihi Shabbos Kala Beinehem V'Yavo Lasos Ba'atzma. Because what was going to happen? So the Rambam felt the reason was because if I allowed somebody to ask a non-Jew to do something for you on Shabbos, so say, "Yeah, I'll still do it myself. It's not a big deal." You should know, by the way, this is a serious, serious problem, mostly when people have domestic help. Right? And especially the kinds of people that have domestic help very often aren't aware of the halachas of Amir al-Nakhri, what's permitted and what's not. And you are fraught with danger, you are fraught with peril when you have a domestic if you don't know the halachas meticulously about what can and what cannot be done.
Especially cooking.
Oh, cooking for sure. Beis. Nachri she'asa malacha me'asmo b'Shabbos. Let's say a non-Jew did something on his own. In Bishvil Yisrael asa also, if he did it for a Jew, let's say the non-Jew came home and came in and he saw, "Oh, you know, it's cold in here. I'm going to turn on the heat for you." So if he does it for a Jew, it's asa. Asa lehanos b'asa malacha ad motzei Shabbos. You're not allowed to benefit from that malacha until after Shabbos. V'yamtin b'chadei she'tase. See that line, b'chadei she'tase? You've heard that before. So for example, let's say the Dunkin' Donuts people know that all the Jews show up at Dunkin' Donuts right after Shabbos. Mm-hmm. So about half an hour before sundown, they start trying to make donuts. They start making fresh donuts because then all the Jews are going to come. Right? So it would be a problem for me to benefit from the non-Jew making donuts for the Jews, because specifically who comes at a 9:30 on a Saturday night? Only Jews, right? Right? There'd be a problem unless I waited the Chedesh Yaseh, the amount of time it would take to accomplish that goal. So the benefit in donuts is how long does it take to fry up a donut?
So that if you came in at 10:30,
no, fine, no problem. Come. Not even 10:30. How long does it take to fry up a donut?
You have to let it.
Donuts don't rise.
Sure, they do the yeast donuts.
Really?
Yeah.
How long does it take to make a donut?
I don't know.
First of all their donuts are already pre-made. They're just frying them up. Right? So how long does it take to fry up a donut? Nope. 2-3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. So don't, you know.
So don't go.
If you're that desperate, I say to people, that you have to have your donut, you know, the minute Shabbos is over.
Buy one the day before.
You have other problems, I was going to say. Yeah. What about a FedEx example?
On Friday, mail runners. Pretty sure it's going to get there the next day. It's absolutely positively no guarantee.
If I said exit, if I ask for Saturday delivery, or if I don't ask Saturday delivery?
Mail, not regular mail. Most letters get a mail. If I'm going to mail letter to you, it's going to get there tomorrow.
Yeah, but again, in this case, I'm not specifically asking him to do something for me because he's coming to my house anyway. Correct?
FedEx, so most of
the mailman is coming to my house anyway. That's his job, to come to my house. So you're adding one more thing to him?
I think that. As opposed to just putting stuff in.
I don't understand.
Someone comes out on the bed.
Oh, to take the letter, you mean on Shabbos?
Or
to take
the letter? For me. He said, "Oh, if the letter's taken out, I can go out."
I don't know. He would still come anyway. There's no mail for you?
I just meant Do you not open mail on Sunday?
Oh, no, you can mail. You can open mail on Sunday. Saturday night, you're allowed to. Cool. It's also a question of delivery, and is the delivery itself a malacha?
Right.
The mail is fine on to pick up on the Saturday night. Okay. One second. You shouldn't do it in public anyway. Let's say the non Jew did it for himself. Then you could benefit on Shabbos.
If the donut is fried up, he takes a bite.
If you don't, and he's frying it. He's frying it up for himself, or he's frying it up. Let's say, for example, it just so happens, I don't know, the patrons in Dunkin' Donuts are mostly non Jews on a Saturday night.
He takes a bite and says, tasted, it's good.
Yeah, no. Because in our case, he's cooking up a whole batch, and he knows most of them are going to be for Jews.
Yeah, but he's doing it as a good businessman, knowing that that's when his clients are going to start showing up.
Right, exactly.
What is the majority?
If the non-Jew lit a candle for himself, then a Jew can benefit. But if it's for not, if it's for Jews, it's forbidden. Let's say they're all on a boat, and the non-Jew made a ramp to get off the boat. Then fine, the Jew can also get off of that ramp. But if he did it specifically to let the Jews off the boat, again, forbidden.
That's interesting, because I remember when people arrived in New York on board a ship.
Yeah.
And a ship docked on Shabbos. Entered right forbade them from getting off the boat.
Right.
Because that's completing a journey.
Oh, that's different. That's, we're talking about the non-Jew actually built the ramp.
Well,
so you're benefiting from
the ramp.
Yeah, that's different. You're in this case, the Rambam was talking about. He's really quoting a case from the Gemara where they were on a boat, and the non-Jew built the ramp on Shabbos. So is that benefiting from a malacha from the work of the non-Jew on Shabbos or not? And they permitted it because he did it first to get himself off the boat, and then to get everybody, and then everybody else could follow afterwards. But the completing a journey on Shabbos is a different problem, a different issue entirely. Okay.
Case of the flying ramp.
What?
The case of the flying rabbi.
Yeah. Okay.
You've never heard that one?
Flying rabbi?
Yeah.
No?
A long story.
Okay. Look in Dalit. Dalit.
Because we fired him for flying on Shabbos.
Your rabbi took you to a basin because for flying on Shabbos?
And they awarded him half a year's contract and what he would have gotten.
For flying on Shabbos? Rabbi Initial?
No. In Washington Heights. You never heard of the great Rabbi Lieber? And he flew. He didn't tell anyone he was going to fly on Shabbos. He flew with a German singing group, the Ehrenreich singing group. And in the Aufbau, here was a
picture. In Washington Heights?
Yeah, the Ehrenreich singing group, and there he was. So he came back, and he said, wow. They fired him right away. He came back, he said, well, my wife, we got on the plane early. My wife lit candles in the bathroom there, which...
In the plane? We
couldn't do even back then.
The candles, that's what they...
We stayed on the plane, and then we fired him.
On the plane all 24 hours?
He said. And
24 hours?
I'm not thinking so. Nobody's going to let him stay on a plane.
I can show you the base.
I actually agree.
Yeah, interesting.
And they said he had a contract and we had to honor it.
Huh. Okay.
Hugo used to tell everyone about it, but it was our rabbi that did it.
Ner Hadalik bin Nesiba b'Shabbos. Let's say a light is lit for a party on Shabbos. Irov Yisrael asked the Stamishlar. If there are mostly Jews at this party, then you can't benefit. Shamadik al Dasarov Mad, because whoever lights the candles does it for the majority. I mean, Rov Nachman, if it's mostly non-Jews, Mutal Yisrael, then you can. Okay. Let's turn to page 3. Yeah, page 3? You don't have page 3? No. Okay. So now we have to get into the nitty gritty. The nitty gritty.
There's a lot of nitty gritty.
Yeah, a lot of nitty gritty. What?
More nitty than gritty? Or more gritty?
Not really. It's not forever, forever. Yes. First, I'm going to learn. One. Look where it says Shin Zion, Siv Chaf Aleph. Shin Zion, Siv Chaf Aleph. Okay? Source is 7. See the bottom one? Shin Zion, Chaf Aleph?
Yeah.
Asur Lomar Le'eno Yehudi B'Shabbos. You're not allowed to tell non-Jew, Heilach Basar Zeh U'Bashel Arto L'Tzarchecha. You know what? Here's a steak in my freezer. Go cook it up at your own house. Now, am I benefiting from him cooking his steak, my steak in his house?
No.
No. I'm not allowed to tell him to do a malacha, even if I'm not going to benefit. Okay? That's one. So I'm not allowed to explicitly ask him to do something. Okay? One second. Let me see.
Misha, even if he's hungry?
What?
In other words, if
he can do whatever he wants. But I can't tell him to do it. I can't instruct him to do it. Look at Chaf Beis. Kol Shavus D'Rabbanan. See, the problem with these halachas are very much all over the place. Kol Shavus D'Rabbanan. Shavus D'Rabbanan is a din D'Rabbanan. Mutar Bein Hashmashos L'Tzorech Mitzvah. If it's for a mitzvah, then I'm allowed to ask him to do it for a mitzvah. Kagon. Lomar Le'ino Yehudi L'Hadlik No Ner Bein Hashmashos. Let's say I come home Friday night. When I come home Friday night, it's still Bein Hashmashos. It's still early. Okay, it's not dark, it's not three stars, it's only getting dark, so it's not totally dark, so that's not Shabbos to Oraisa. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then I get come home and there's no lights on in the house, power outage. Okay, and I need somebody to turn on my breaker, my whole breaker blew and I need somebody to turn on my breaker. Can I ask the non-Jew to go ahead and turn on my breaker? So he says, yeah, you're allowed to for a mitzvah, for tzorach mitzvah ben hashmashos, you're permitted to do. For example, let's say I was busy, I have to take off my shirt, right? I'm not allowed to eat
your imported yellow
grapes.
No, your imported
yellow peppers, right, until I take off my shirt. Okay? This is the Rambam. Hagah. Kol davar she'asur lomar le'eino liyehudi la'asos b'Shabbos. If I'm not allowed, anything I'm not allowed to tell him to do, asher lirmos lo la'asoso. Okay?
You can't give him a hint.
Yes. Right. People think, well, I can't ask a non-Jew to do it, but I can,
sign language.
Use gypsy sign language.
Right. So you're not allowed to do that. Right? You're not allowed to do that.
Right.
So
I'm just trying to interpret.
Look at what was I saying? You don't know. Look at Ayin Vav in the Mishnah Berurah. Asur lirmos. You're not allowed to hint. Degam zehu bichlal amira le'eno yehudi. That's also considered asking a non-Jew to do something for you. Kevan shal yidei remizato ose b'shabbat. If I go to him and I go, right? What's he going to think? Right.
I'm cold. Fine.
What's the difference? If I say I'm cold, then what? Then what? Negative statement. Right. And then if he would turn the heat on,
or close the window.
Let's say he would turn. Oh, close in the window. You could do. If he would turn the heat on. If he would turn the heat on and leave, then what happened?
Your
original problem. Right. So I'm cold is a good example. Let's see in a second.
They say, aren't you cold?
Hold on a second.
Yeah, I'm leaving. I'm going to where it's warm.
This is great. Okay, therefore, Asher Lomar Le... What? See where it says...
I was up to where you...
Hu Adin, Pei Hei, the beginning of the line, five lines on the bottom. Oh. Hu Adin?
Here it is.
But who I did? Shasur lomar lo b'shabes ezadaver shiavin mitokach shiasa malach. I can't say something in code that he'll understand to go do a malacha. For example, okay. Therefore, asur lomar le'inu yehudi shiakaneach chatmo k'den shiavin shiasir hapecham shabros haner. So in those houses, they had, let's say, for example, a certain kind of lamp, and the lamp had to be cleaned. If it got too sooty, right? Then it has to be cleaned out in order for the light to become better. So you can't say to the guy, you can't say, go clean your nose. And the guy knows, he knows, clean my nose, he must mean...
To clean the lamp.
To clean the lamp. You can't do that.
Like even if you did the signal beforehand, or you had a password.
Okay. Ach, one second. Ach, but. He says, but. Kisha omer haramiza le'eno yehudi shelo b'lashon tzivoy. What if I hint... without the Lashon Tzivoy, the command. Like Dave said, it's pretty dark in here, kind of hard to read well. So goes to Omer, he says, Haner ain Omer Yefeh, the light isn't shining well. Oh, ain yachol likros lor haner hazeh, she spoke, I can't read by that light. V'shomea ha'eno Yehudi umetakno, and the non-Jew hears this and fixes it. Sorry. Permitted to ain zeh bichlal amira, that's not Amira, one. And two, Aren't you benefiting from the non-Jew doing work for you? In this case, no.
What is it?
Why? He says, in this particular example, going from bad life to good life isn't enough of a tangible benefit that the rabbis forbid. What? Right. Meaning, if it was pitch black, you came over, it was pitch black, and your non-Jewish neighbor came and you said, oh, it's really dark in here. Right?
You couldn't stand
and he turns on the light for you, you're out of there.
But if you have a three-way light bulb and you say it's dark,
yes,
you then adjust it up.
Absolutely.
One.
Correct. Absolutely. You say it's dark. What you can't say is, hey, it would be really good if you turned on the light. So meaning, in halakhic parlay, you're not allowed to hint the lashon sivoy, with the language of command. You're not allowed to intimate an action on his part.
I have something here that you might like to read, except there's no lights on.
That's fine. Because you never told him, you know, except, but if you said, I have something here you might like to read, if you turned on the light, that's not fine. Because then you cross that threshold of what's permitted and what's forbidden. Now, what could you hint to the non-Jew to do? I've done this a number of times. This happens to me a number of times. What could you hint the non-Jew to do?
To raise the heat?
No. Raising the heat is benefiting from it.
If your nose is stuffed, you could ask him to help you blow it.
Blow your nose. You can do it. What could you ask the non-Jew to do? This happened to us a number of times. I remember it. The night Rina went into labor, the next day, Rina went into labor, the first day when Simcha was born, for some reason I left the light on in my bedroom. And she was 9 months pregnant, and it was like, oh God, we're never going to fall asleep. So what am I allowed to do? I have two problems. I'm not allowed to benefit from the malacha of a non-Jew, and I'm not allowed to ask. What am I allowed to do?
Move out of the room.
Well, that's for sure. We couldn't. There's somebody who's in the other room. I'm allowed to hint. You tell your 9-month pregnant wife, oh, go sleep on the couch. Right? Not a good idea. She actually went into labor the next morning, 5 o'clock in the morning. Okay? I'm allowed to hint. Plus, if the non-Jew turns off a light, mm-hmm, what do we say? Am I benefiting tangibly from his action?
Oh, it's a non-tangible.
It's a non-tangible. It's an intangible benefit. So I'm allowed to benefit from the negative, meaning if he turns off a light. So therefore, if the mailman comes, or, for example, this has happened to us a couple of times, we like the light on in the fridge. I know, and when I grew up, mm-hmm, right, I never knew there was a light in the fridge, mm-hmm, growing up. Why? Because when my parents got it, the first thing they did was unscrew the light bulb, and that was it.
Right.
So when we first bought a fridge, it's like, oh, you know, like, by Eeyore. Like, you could actually see what's on the bottom. I always wondered why the fruit went dead on my mom's refrigerator, because you couldn't see anything. Right? Because, well, finally, so I like having light on the fridge. There's only one problem.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. It's a problem. It's an issue. So we are trying to be as careful as we can that we have this duct tape above our refrigerator, and we always duct tape the button before Shabbos. And from Thursday on, whoever gets there first, duct tape on Shabbos. Duct tape for Shabbos. Fine. What happened a couple of times?
You forget.
I forgot. Right.
Or the duct tape comes loose?
No, never. It's never happened.
Really?
Never.
It happened to me.
Duct tape is magic. Okay, anyway.
Yeah, if you use it 99 times.
Right. We always use it.
Fresh tape.
Okay, fresh tape. So what happened? So what did I do? I went across the street and I said to a non-Jewish kid, nice kid, I said, and by the way, one of the big problems in the Oak Park neighborhood is we don't have any Shabbos boys anymore. Yeah, it's a big problem. My Shabbos non-Jew moved away. Roger was a great guy. He knew exactly what the deal was. Now I have to find some other non-Jew to explain to him. So anyway, so I found the kid and I said, this is going to sound a little unusual, but you know that we keep the Sabbath. And I accidentally left the light on in the refrigerator. And I'm not allowed to tape it shut on Shabbos, which would turn off the light. So he came and he did that. He turned off the light for us. Because I'm not allowed to do it, I'm not permitted to do it. I never hinted that he should do it actively. I hinted negatively. Plus, I'm not benefiting tangibly from his action. So that's the only thing you're allowed to do. You're never allowed to hint in such a way that you're going to benefit from his action positively. Yeah.
Okay, say again how you got him to do it.
Yeah.
What did I say? I said, I'm not allowed to... I don't know. I can't close my refrigerator because that will turn off the light.
Oh, you had it open already.
Yeah, it was open. I mean, you couldn't have opened it.
Okay.
Opening is a big crowd.
If you were smart, you'd probably do whatever you want, but just have everyone come turn it off. You know?
What do you mean? Oh, well.
The TV,
The TV is bothering me now, right? The Pistons game is over, and now I can't fall asleep. What can I do?
Okay, we forgot to put the stove, the oven, on Shabbos mode.
Yeah. And therefore?
If you're going to open the door to take the cholent out, then it's going to go on.
Oh, okay.
So you want to have, it's already Shabbos.
Right.
You forgot to put it on Shabbos mode.
Right.
Okay, the cholent is in there, it's going to burn.
You have other food? So you want the guy to press the button that will turn the light off?
No, that will put it on Shabbos mode.
And that will make the light not go on when you open
it.
Yeah, I think you should do the same thing. Again, mailman comes and you say, I forgot to turn my Shabbos on, you know, I forgot to, my oven is on in a certain way, and, you know, if I open it, the light will go on, and that's forbidden for me on Shabbos.
Now, the problem there is, though, in order to get to the Shabbos mode, you have to almost read the instructions on how to do it. It's not just pressing one button and you're in Shabbos.
See, it's a little tricky, because if you say it in a certain way, like, I would turn on the light, then that's a problem. You know what I'm saying? If you're talking about turning on the light, then you're suggesting what you would do. I would be happy if, you know, the lights were on. So you have to do it in such a way that you do it in a roundabout way without actually asking him to do it. So you're in a little bit of trouble, because you have to somehow get him to push the button without telling him to push the button.
You have to get him to push upper oven, Shabbos mode, start, or whatever it is.
Right, good luck.
Except if the guy across the street already knows how to do it.
Right, then you would say, unless my oven on without turning on the Shabbos mode.
How many non-Jews buy a stove with a Shabbos timer on it?
Well, if you have a good non-Jew, you say, I need you to learn this in case I forget. You know, you're good neighbors.
Oh,
yeah.
Before you know it, you're about to have to be serious. You'll be teaching these things like, to a monkey. You know, how many Jewish people have monkeys that maybe help them, you know, they have, you know, that, you know, ear helping hands?
Yeah.
Monkeys that are taught how to do these sort of things to people.
Could you benefit from a monkey? No, you know why? Because your animal is not allowed to do malacha on Shabbos. Ata ovincha vitecha abdecha matecha vehebhentecha sebi serecha. Yeah, your animals are forbidden from doing malacha on Shabbos.
You're a star.
What?
You're a star.
Why? no monkeys. No monkeys. No robots either. Sorry.
Let's look a little bit into the future.
Uh-huh.
What about a robot?
Robots? I just said that. No robots either.
Mm-hmm.
It's your property. Your property. I don't think so. I don't think that would be permitted either. Okay. So you can't say my fridge light is on and I can't close it. You could say my fridge light is on.
Okay.
Yeah.
But after he does it, aren't you receiving enough from it? Because then you were able to use it.
Yeah, but he turned it off. Remember, it's not a tangible benefit. It's not tangible since you turned something off. Turn something on.
Okay.
Would be forbidden.
Okay.
Now I understand what you mean about the fire. It's not starting the fire. Turning off the fire, it would be the same thing turning off.
Correct.
The fire. That's where you talk about tangible.
Okay. The last thing we're going to learn about is if it's for a mitzvah. One second. So we said for a mitzvah, usually, or for a community, for great need, we also permit to ask a non-Jew. One second. So let me give you the case of when the non-Jew needed it. The story Eddie was telling, Rabbi Hershishach was telling me this story. He said there was one of the Rabbanim HaRashiim, the chief rabbis, was once visiting a wealthy gvir, a wealthy non-Jew, a wealthy Jew in Toronto. So this man had a very beautiful library, and he wanted to, and the rabbi on Shabbos went in, and he wanted to read from the library. So the non-Jewish maid saw that the rabbi was there, and she went in and she turned on the light and she left. And as soon as she turned on the light, the rabbi, he left. Because she turned on the light for him, and then she left. So it was clear that she was doing it for him, so he's not allowed to benefit. So the maid got all flustered. What did I do wrong? I don't understand. I was turning on the light on for the rabbi. You know, he can't turn on the light. So they explained it to her what the issue was. He explained it to her, and fine. 20 years later, you know, three rabbanim rashiim later, three chief rabbis later, then the chief rabbi is at the same Jew's house. And the same Jew's house, the same rich man's house, and he walks into the library, and the maid sees the rabbi wants to read. So she walks into the library, turns on the light, takes a magazine out of the rack, sits down and starts reading. leaves for a few minutes, leaves for the magazine, gets up and leaves. And he can't believe it. This is like the greatest thing ever. The maid understands that she has to read, you know, that she says, Dad did for herself. So explain to him, no, three chief rabbis before. That's how she learns. Yeah. And that's important to know. You have a maid. Now, what about washing your dishes? You have a maid, can she wash your dishes? Can you tell her to wash the dishes? The answer is yes. Why? Can she use the hot water? The answer is yes. Why? Because you say, listen, you know, Nadia, I'd like you to wash the dishes. Nadia could very well wash dishes with cold water, using your, you know, your brush, you know, that there's no shechita on, and it would just take her a ton of time longer. Right? So now the fact that she chooses to use hot water, that's her own choice in order to get her job done quicker. She's not forbidden from doing things that are benefiting herself. She's only forbidden from doing things that will benefit you. Right? So her job is to get the dishes clean. And that there's a permissible way to do it. Mm-hmm. Right? The fact that she does it in a way that's forbidden for you is not a malacha that's benefiting you. It's a malacha that's benefiting her. Okay? So you have to know what's benefiting you and what's benefiting her. I've seen sometimes, you know, the maid's doing the laundry. I was at somebody's house once for a kiddush, and the maid's sitting there doing the laundry. That is not permitted. The maid is not allowed to do the laundry, you know. Yeah, because she's considered an hourly worker. She's working for you on the clock, and she's, you know. Now, if you said to her, I'm going away for the weekend, make sure the laundry's done after, you know, and make sure the laundry's done, yeah, she can do whatever she wants. Another good example of this is also being benefiting. Let's say I, you know, I need my car done. So I drop it off at the mechanics on late Friday, and I say, I need it Saturday night. So that you're not allowed to do because you're asking the laundry specifically to work for you on Shabbos. But if you say to him, I'm going to pick it up Sunday, pick it up Sunday afternoon, he can do whatever he wants. He doesn't have to specifically do it for you on Shabbos or not Shabbos. That's his choice of when he's going to do the work, and that's his decision. Okay. When is Amir al-Akum permitted? Amir al-Akum is permitted in a few cases. One, in the case of illness. If a person is sick, then they're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do work for them. Let's say in a hospital, you can ask the nurse to turn a light on, to turn a light off. You're allowed to do Amir al-Akum in that case for your benefit. Okay, if a person has a migraine headache, you can ask a non-Jew to go buy you some medicine. Things of that nature. Okay? Those are things that's better permitted. Number two, if for the need of a mitzvah, you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do a shvus, a din d'rabbanan. So let's say, for example, like the example that Halacha gives is, your shofar is stuck in a tree. Here. What? Right? Your shofar is stuck in a tree. So you're not allowed to climb a tree on Shabbos because you maybe you're going to pull off a branch. You're not allowed to climb a tree. So you could say to the non-Jew, could you climb that tree for me and pull down my shofar so that I can get my shofar on Shabbos? I know, it's a little far-fetched, but whatever. You're allowed to ask.
What do you want to do with the shofar on Shabbos?
No, I mean, yeah, on Rosh Hashanah. Okay, fine. I do want to see if I forgot something else.
In addition,
one is permitted to ask a non-Jew to do something for a Jew in a case of great communal need. So the example that he gives in his case was, let's say, for example, it's Yom Kippur night. Mm-hmm. The power goes off. The lights are out, and we're all going to daven Maariv. So you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do a malacha for you on Yom Kippur. Now, the question would be, I know we always like to kvetch about asking the non-Jew to raise the temperature or lower the temperature in the shul. Is the fact that you don't want to put on an extra sweater because the ladies are cold in the back, is that considered a great need, or is it not considered a great need? So what would be the difference? So the difference would be,
it's a great need.
My wife is in the back. The difference would be, interestingly enough, so we say, the difference would be asking him to raise or lower. Meaning if the air conditioning is on, and you wanted to turn the air conditioning on higher, then you'd be benefiting tangibly from his benefit. But if you wanted to lower the air conditioner, you wanted to go off.
Because it's too cold?
Correct. Meaning the air conditioning is interesting because you might have another out. For example, once it's on, so to ask a non-Jew to keep it going, that's only Durabana. It's only pressing a button, which is Durabana. You're not asking it to turn something on. And that might be permitted for the case of a community, because it's a Durabanan for the case of a community, for the need of a community. But for a D'araisa, let's say the heat is not on. You need to turn it on. Right? So in a shul, the heat was not on, the non-Jew would be allowed to do that. But, you know, in your own house, what about the case we talked about, the case of in the shtetl, what they used to do? Look at Dalit. I'm sorry, Hey. Hey, and on page 3 at the top. The archos karos, in cold communities, mutar le'enu yehudi la'asos midua b'shvil katanin. So the non-Jews, you're allowed to have a non-Jew come and make a fire for children. Umutar ma'agidolim yuskamin bo. Ah, what's he doing for the children? Lo and behold. the adults can benefit too. Right? And even for gedolim, for adults, if it's really cold, why? In the middle of Poland, it's the middle of the winter, it's freezing, it's dangerous, it's not, it's everybody's considered a chole, a sick person vis-a-vis. Remember we said you're allowed to ask a non-Jew to do something if you're on Shabbos, if you are sick. And if you don't light the fire, you will get sick. Now it's interesting, and the Mishnah writes that the custom became, it became universally accepted. That's what everybody did. So he says, I'm not so happy. He says, "Veloka ozam senogin heter alfa pisha ena kar gado biyamahu." It's got to be really cold. But if it's not so cold, but I think what they did was, as soon as it turned winter, everybody, the non-Jew came, that was the accepted practice. And the rabbis, they sort of let the sleeping dogs lie. They didn't want it because they knew the people would not be able to withstand not having heat in their house on Shabbos, that would be too much to ask them. And so they sort of let it slide, and they really didn't make a big stink about it. Because I think Mr. Middleman told me that in the shtetl, everybody did. It was just the way it was, that the non-Jew would come into every house and set up the fire, and that the fire would be going for the rest of the day, and that was the way it was done. Okay, just to sum up, everybody take a flow chart. You're going to have to fill in your flow chart. Okay, this is it's a little test. See how you know.
What if I'm sure, okay? I feel, a very important person can really sit in shul on your super.
Yeah.
And in a certain way.
What if it's not an important person? What if it's an unimportant person?
I know, that's my point. And why do you feel that it's necessary to get a message out to say to kill him out of the shul?
No. Sorry. Kill him is not enough. You call the ambulance and take him to the hospital. No. Asking not to do with you. We're going to work left to right. Asking indirectly. Is the action of the Araisha or the Rabbana? I see where I am? Asking directly. The Araisha. Okay? I'm going to ask him to do a Araisha, to light a fire, to turn on the light. Is it for a case of a great need or an illness? If the answer is no, then is it forbidden or permitted? Not for a case of great need to ask a non-Jew to do malacha directly.
Not
for a case of great need or a case of illness. Then it is prohibited. Usher. Right. See where I am? By under no?
Right.
The putting the ogle? Forbidden. Usher.
Oh.
If it is for a case of great need, and you have to ask a Rav what great need is, you're not allowed to really sort of decide that on your own. Or if it's for an illness, then the answer is?
Yes.
Mutter, correct? What if the action is the Rabbanan? For example, it's just a difficult one. Pressing the button on the elevator. So the rabbi I spoke to, for this woman, he said he felt that it was great need that she shouldn't be stuck in her house all Shabbos because that would ruin her ability to enjoy Shabbos. To be stuck on the third floor all Shabbos, it was too much. So he said, first and foremost, she should get on the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
And ostensibly, what any normal human being will do is
can I help you? Where are you going?
What floor are you going to? Right. So then all you say is, I'm going to the first floor. So they'll probably press the button on their own. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to the third floor. If nobody asks, then you can say, I need to go to the first floor.
You know
what I'm saying? Remember, you're trying to minimize. You're trying to first do it with Ramiza, and then if that's not possible, then Amir will be permitted.
A person lives on the 14th floor or something of a high rise.
Yeah.
No automatic elevator. They have an elevator man.
Right.
And he had the elevator man every Shabbos waiting for him to take him down, waiting for him.
Again, you're benefiting from the malacha of a non-Jew. So I would say that if you can't, unless you can't walk, you have to walk.
Could walk physically, but he had a bad heart. He couldn't climb.
Dangerous for him, you're talking about.
So that's,
I would say to him, yes, he should also make an effort to get off that floor. You know what I'm saying?
Or the rules.
Absolutely.
Right, not easy. Not easy. But again, if it's dangerous for him, if it's physically dangerous for the climb 14 flights of steps, which is possible, then he has a din of a cholem. And then he's not asking, and he's benefiting in a tangible way. But I think that would be permitted in the case of a great need.
Okay. An Orthodox shul, I don't know if they still have it this
way,
but they used to have it this way. The women's Ezra's notion was upstairs in the balcony.
Right.
On Shabbos, they used to have an elevator going up and down, up and down.
Right. Automatically.
Nope. This was before push button.
Yeah, with a non-Jew.
Right.
Interesting. I don't know. And that regular woman probably shouldn't get on there. A regular woman shouldn't get on there. Because you're benefiting for no reason.
It would only be for a chola.
Correct.
If somebody's pregnant.
No. Because you're not, why is it a scam? Those are set to go automatically. Ask me indirectly. One, did you use a gesture or use lashon tzava, language of command? If the answer is yes, then what's the halacha?
No.
Prohibited. Forbidden. Also. If the answer is no, then is there any direct substantial benefit? But if there's direct substantial benefit, again prohibited. But if there's no direct substantial benefit, so again, in order, the only way to get it to be permitted for a normal person who's not sick and it's not a mitzvah is indirect benefit and indirect, not even direct asking. I can I'm asking him without lashon tzava'a. And so the only things you're ever allowed to really ask a non-Jew to do in a backhanded way is to turn something off for a minimal benefit. But if it's anything more than that, that would not be permitted on Shabbos or Yom Tov. I think that this is something actually that people, there's just great misconceptions about. They just don't know about, and it's important to let people know, oh, I don't really know if you can ask the non-Jew to, you know, order the tickets for you on Shabbos. Because, I don't think that that's a need of a mitzvah to get to these mystery concepts. Yeah, I guess, I don't know. We'll have to take that up with a greater rabbi than me. Okay. Next.